Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 126 of Growth Marketing Today. This is your host, Ramley John, and I'm excited to have Deb Basu today. He's going to be talking about building the right systems in place to grow a seven-figure business. Now, with the right systems in place, you can grow a business predictably and sustainably, even in uncertain times. And this is especially true for freelancers and agency owners. So in this episode, Dave Basu, founder and chief experience officer at Powered by Search, he shares the 9 systems he created to bootstrap and scale his agency to a multi-7-figure business in just a few years. So in this episode 126, you'll learn first how Dev got his first ever client. And this is a lot of things. A lot of freelancers and agency owners really struggle with this, the ones that I've talked to. Second, 3 steps to figuring out your niche. Third, the most overlooked aspects to growing a business. Now, before we jump in, I've created a free growth cheat sheet with all the actionable tips from this episode in a 1-page PDF. Seriously, why take notes about this podcast when you can just steal mine? You can go to growthtoday.fm/126 to get it now. And you can also find this link in the description of the show. Now get it now because I take this episode's cheat sheet away when I publish the next episode next week. So go ahead, go there, growthtoday.fm/126. I also want to thank the sponsor for this episode. These folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts that you and I can learn from. Thanks to LinkedIn. And LinkedIn is an undiscovered goldmine for many advertisers. Now, one thing I really love about advertising on LinkedIn is how you can target by very exclusive criteria that you won't find anywhere else, such as company growth rate, job seniority, job title, skills, and more. Whether you're looking for generating leads, driving website traffic, or building your brand awareness, LinkedIn advertising can help you reach your business goals. Get a $100 free advertising credit to watch your LinkedIn advertising campaign for free at linkedin.com/growtoday or find that link in the description. Well, enough about me. Let's jump into my chat with Dev. Hey, everybody. I'm excited to have Dev here. He is the founder and chief experience officer of Powered by Search. How's it going, Dev? How is your Friday morning going?
Ramley, I'm stoked to be here. Thanks so much for having me. Friday morning is going great. It's a little gloomy here in Toronto, but that's okay. You can bring a sunny disposition to any day.
Oh, yeah, that's totally true. I'm super excited. You know, before we jump into marketing, one thing that it's really fascinating that you said that you've done is you've climbed, summited Mount Kilimanjaro last year. First of all, congrats. I can't imagine, you know, that was probably one of my goals as well at some point in my life. But how was that experience for you?
You know, it was an exhilarating experience for me. It was surreal in every sense of the word. We spent 8 days, my wife and I, in Tanzania, and just got to, you know the people, and they're amazing and friendly, and the landscape is so amazing in so many ways. It was one of the hardest things that I've ever done, because the mountains, it's one of the 7 summits of the world, and it's a journey. Now, this is probably the 2nd or 3rd peak that I've climbed, but it's one of the 7 summits, and now I'm thinking about what's next. But it was, we climbed through the night on the summit night, and we started around, I think, 12:30 a.m. and we got to the summit by 5:30 a.m. So, you know, it was a long climb in the night when you don't really know what's going on other than just going up the switchbacks. And so getting to the top and seeing snow on the top, it was minus 20 probably. And then also realizing that you're in the middle of Africa where on the ground, it's like plus 30 degrees, you know, it's quite a unique experience for sure.
What got you started in this? I'm really curious, like, is it just seeing that view or like just a personal challenge?
I've always just been a really driven individual and kept pushing myself and, you know, have done that obviously in these sort of the intellectual spheres of learning things and applying that. And I really wanted a physical challenge. My wife is actually who got me into it a couple of years ago when we were we're planning a vacation, and rather than doing a beach vacation, we said, hey, why don't we go do Machu Picchu instead? And the typical trail to Machu Picchu is something called the Inca Trail. And that's where you go through, you know, these steps effectively that the Incans had put together. It's a busy track overall. And much to our delight, that was actually sold out. So we picked this lesser known path called the Salcante Trail. And you have to walk through mountain passes effectively for 5 days to get there. So we did about a 100-kilometer trek through to get to Machu Picchu. And then we climbed a mountain next to it called Huaynu Picchu, which only about 200 people go up per day. And then it's very, very steep. So it's kind of dizzying going up and coming down as well. But I think it sparked an interest in climbing and mountaineering that I didn't know I had. And now I've become kind of a nut and, you know, just going and looking at like what these seven summits are like and what order to do them in. And that's kind of what my jam is outside of marketing and a lot of the other things that I focus on.
I was going to ask you what your wife thought about it, but it seems like she's the one who like encouraged it.
Oh, she egged me on. But I think that she's realized in some ways that now we're getting into territory where I want to do the other seven summits or the other six summits, basically. And she's realizing that there's an element of both danger and being away for some time, because the higher you go up in altitude, you need to acclimate. Otherwise, you can get altitude sickness. So the next peak that I want to do is in Argentina. And it's called Aconcagua. It's the highest mountain outside the Himalayas. But that trip's going to be at least a month being away from. So, you know, just to get there, acclimate, to go up and whatnot. And so now it's going to get serious. There's like ice climbing, crampon skills. There's a lot to learn basically over there. So I love that stuff. It just like feeling like a student and it being hard and grinding through it is just something that really, you know, it lights me up.
Interesting. And when is that happening? That when are you going to do that Aconcagua?
I know, it's a mouthful, Aconcagua. It was supposed to be this year, but with the pandemic, we had to shift that off. So it'll probably be sometime in 2021. It's still kind of TBD at this point with the vaccine and when that's going to come out. But whenever it does, it's the next kind of big expedition that I want to do.
That's really fascinating. Man, I can probably talk about this and just ask more questions about mountaineering just out of curiosity on my part. But let's talk about marketing. And I just want to get into your story first, how you first started Powered by Search and you know, what was the genesis of that?
Yeah. So this kind of takes me back. I'm 32 now, and I started in marketing when I was about 17. My first role was actually at Microsoft Canada, where I didn't know a lick about digital marketing at all. I was a traditional marketer working on channel partnerships and events and a lot of the offline stuff when it comes to marketing and selling. We got into a situation where my boss actually ended up leaving Microsoft about 2 weeks after I joined, and I had to take on a number of his responsibilities at that point in time as a marketing associate. So it was both terrifying and exhilarating at the same time to have so much responsibility, but have absolutely no experience or skill set to really deserve that, frankly. One of the things that I inherited as part of that responsibility was the part of Microsoft.ca, the Canadian website, that our team, the OEM team, basically had. And there was a day where one of my channel partners, these are people like Lenovo, MDG, et cetera, who would buy Windows Server Office products from Microsoft. They were looking for an intranet portal online, and they couldn't find it. And when we were at Microsoft, we're not supposed to say use Google to go search things. And so I told them at that point to go down the path of using MSN, because Bing didn't exist at that point in time. This was like early 2006, 2007, and they couldn't find it. So then in hushed tones, I told them, hey, go look it up on Google. Tell me if you can find it. And they couldn't find it. And that's when I learned about the fact that these, you know, search engines could find stuff online and commercial companies like Microsoft hadn't had an interest in it. It's a little embarrassing that, you know, we couldn't find a website, our website, on a search engine that we had built. And so that really piqued my curiosity about how digital marketing works. And fast forwarding that to a few years later, I'd started consulting around how to grow website traffic and conversions. And eventually a company affiliated with the Yellow Pages group asked me to come build a digital marketing agency for them. They were a traditional agency. If you remember these heavy books that had, you know, commercial listings in them that no one really uses anymore, and that they're good doorstoppers these days. But they saw that, and the bleeding of revenue led to them asking me to come on board and build this agency up for them. It was a phenomenal opportunity. I was like 18, 19 years old at that point in time, learning sales and marketing from these industry veterans. And the Yellow Pages group always had a really great sales training program. But I learned that, got that up to a 7-figure run rate. And then right around the time school finished, I went to U of T, University of Toronto, for a business degree in my undergraduate program. I said, you know what, maybe there's time for something else. So that's when I started Powered by Search, literally the day after my final exams. It feels like a lifetime ago now, and kind of is. I mean, it's been 11 years of being in the business and growing it. That's when I started Powered by Search. Mm.
I noticed you added some notes here, and there's something that I find fascinating about your boss telling you that you wouldn't be a good manager and fax machines were too expensive. But what is that about? And, like, you know, I'm guessing that kind of kicked off your desire to start your own thing.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's two types of managers: the ones that encourage your upward growth, the ones that try to hinder it, for different reasons, really. And my boss at the time had essentially, I think they had gotten an inkling that I would have been good as an entrepreneur. I didn't know it, but they did at that point. And I think this conversation really, it lit a fire under my butt in many ways to go out and do something, to start something of my own. And the reasons that they had provided were that, hey, you know what, I don't think you're going to be a good manager. I don't think you're good at managing people. And also the capital costs of starting a company are really high. And one of the things, is anecdotally was mentioned, was fax machines are really expensive. And that's when I kind of went, oh, this is really interesting, because I reckon I'm actually fairly decent and I can only get better at communicating with people and getting the best out of working with them. And I haven't used a fax machine in 5 years. So maybe there's something here that I can attempt. And so I said I'd give it a go for 6 months back in 2009, right around the time I finished my undergrad. And it's just kind of been a blur ever since.
That's really fascinating. Like, that, I heard somewhere on Twitter or somewhere where, like, you know, the people who go against you or say stuff against you often becomes like the motivator. Like, I forgot what it's called, like negative motivator or something like that. And it seemed like it worked here, because Powered by Search, like, just looking at your notes, like, you grew fast after you started it, right?
Yeah, we did. And I think that, like, that type of motivation played a role in my early 20s. I think that now I have a different source of motivation. But back then, like, being told what I couldn't do was definitely a great way of saying, oh, well, you know, now I have to prove this to myself and to the people that mattered in my life as well. And it was good startup motivation, if that makes sense. It's not sustainable over the long run. But at the time, it was exactly what I needed.
Mm. So you started Powered by Search in 2009, like you said. And how did you find your first clients? Like, that's one thing that a lot of, I think I saw somewhere that you also help agency owners, but, like, you started this thing. Where did you find clients, or did you already have some before you left? And how did you grow that over the next few years?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think the things that had worked for me personally at that point in my career was publishing and speaking about everything that I was learning and essentially giving away the farm. So I was speaking at conferences. I had my own personal blog. And I'd say that one of the big lessons I learned was all of the information sharing or consulting that happens in one-on-one conversations, if you can find a way of giving that away to other people in public for free, that is a really great way of building a personal brand. And so I'd done that at that point, to the point where companies were coming to me and saying, hey, can Wow. you help me with growing my online presence? And I was like, oh, well, I don't know if I can right now because I'm busy with... and by the way, one fact that maybe I should mention is while I was working for this other company, I was doing a full-time role and doing full-time school at the same time.
Wow.
And so I do not have that level of energy anymore to, you know, smack back Red Bulls and coffee and work incessant hours. But when I had these clients coming to me or these prospective clients, I'd just say, you know what, keep me in mind for later down the line. Right now is not the right time, but I will let you know if something changes. And so for me, it was as simple as starting the company and just reaching back out to those deposits that I'd made in the ATM of my network over time and just saying, hey, I've started something, not sure if it's for you or not. But if you're looking for A, B, and C result, let me know and we'll have a chat. And that's how we got our first few clients within the first sort of 3 months. I was just having this conversation with somebody on Twitter the other day who's a fledgling agency owner trying to grow. And they said, how soon did you guys hit your first six-figure run rate? And for us, that took about 4 months.
Wow. I think that's the beauty about like building your brand or like just blogging or working in public. You know, when you started doing that and speaking, did you have that in mind already that I needed to do this? Like, and what would be your advice to people who might like, oh, why should I even do that? That's not my thing. And they're in a field like design or marketing or where having that personal brand can be a competitive advantage.
You know, I can't say that I did it with an end in mind at that point in time. I just looked at things as, if I can explain to other people what I am learning and applying and teaching as well, then that's a way of refining my thinking. And, it, you know, Richard Feynman kind of says that if you can't teach something, you don't know it. Mm. And for me, that is what drove me to, as both as a way of giving back and helping other people. But then one of the cool things about teaching stuff in general to anyone is as you're talking out the words or as you're writing it out, your own thinking becomes better. Like you find new ways and perspectives of looking at it as you're structuring those thoughts together. And for me, that was an end unto itself. Like there was no means to an end. That was the end. And everything else was gravy that happened afterwards.
It's really fascinating. And on the other side of that, like what should people do the same thing like that, where like, you know, like design or marketing field or sales, where that could be a competitive advantage? What would you say to them?
I'd say just, you know, document what you know and put that into the world. And if there's a set of steps that you have found that works and also what doesn't work is important to document as well. Helping people skip past the mistakes that you know, one has made over their career is a really great way of being able to establish credibility, but also just to impact and help other people as well. So that's a lot of what we do at Powered by Search today, which is we've made a number of different experiments over the last decade, and we found what works and what doesn't and built some playbooks basically around that to help B2B SaaS companies. And in my other business, which is the coaching business where I work with agency owners who aren't scaling fast enough, it's the same thing as well. It's basically documenting every single mistake that I've made in the last 11 years and helping people shortcut the learning curve.
I'm going to go on this deep end because it's really fascinating because, you know, how you help agency owners grow. And, you know, 4 months, you're already six figures. In your notes, you said within the second year, you're at seven figures. What happened? Like, how did that happen? Like, can you give some advice to people who agency owners, like to like, what did you do that worked well and what didn't work well during that,
sure,
that massive growth?
So one of the big things that I realized about the marketplace for professional services in general, whether you call yourself an agency, a consultant, really even any other kind of professional service, even if you look at the types of things that you and I have bought as consumers before, whether that was a landscaping thing or it could have been a plumber coming to your house or whatever. What I've generally found is that most experiences like that are underwhelming. And it's underwhelming because it's fraught with frustration. People don't show up on time. They don't keep the promises that they actually make. So it's as simple as it sounds. It's knowing how to frame the promise you're making to your client and telling them when it will happen and why it will happen and why it might not happen if certain criteria aren't met is just a matter of expectation setting. And then there's follow through. One of the big things I see a lot with consultants and agencies, especially when they're starting out, is, you know, they have multiple spinning plates. When they're selling, they're not delivering. When they're delivering, they're not marketing. When they're marketing, they're not selling at the same time. And so they're trying to do one or the other at the same time, and to the detriment of the rest. And so the biggest thing I think at the beginning is just being really good at what you do and being able to replicate that success. If that happens, then, you know, fundamentally the sale is only completed once you've delivered the service and the client has got the result. And then the funny thing happens, they tell other people. And so I think that the core of it, just like, you know, you work on product-led growth a lot. I know that about you. You can't outwork a bad product. And the same way, you can't outwork a bad service.
That is so good. That's such a good advice. And is that how you grew massively? Like, you were delivering, you already knew you were working in public, you were applying this in your job at that point, and they were getting results and they were telling other people about it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And sometimes there was a little leap of courage or that was required, where, you know, we'd go in and just say, hey, are you happy? Are you seeing results? Do you know anyone else who might be a fit for this, who has a similar challenge? And that's the other thing I see as well, which is a lot of experts in general they hold back from asking for referrals or asking for introductions, and they feel like they have to go it alone on hard mode. But the reality, I think, is if you're in business and you're an entrepreneur and you're working with other entrepreneurs or other businesses as well, we all actually want each other to succeed at the end of the day. And so, you know, of course we have a million things on the plate every single day, but if you have a genuine ask, I think that the world in general, especially if you've been of service to someone else, they're going to go to bat for you.
That totally makes sense. You talked about something there that I find is a big, you know, a lot of consultants face. It's like they're getting this death cycle of, you know, should they be looking for new clients, or should they be delivering the results, or should they be like negotiating deals? Especially if you're a one person consultant, like how do you get out of that? Do you hire people who is good at negotiation when you're really good at delivery, or would you have any other advice for that?
I'm a big fan of, you know, there's these levels that you have to break through. And there's an article that I was interviewed for by a company called Report Garden. And one of the theories that I had was that agencies break in threes and tens. So, you know, from one to three, you're a different, you know, different agency, from solo founder to when you have two employees and now you're a team of three. And then it breaks again around when you're 10 people. And it breaks because of communication, and it also breaks because of just the nodes of different people working together. And so, you know, up to a certain point, you don't need any systems. You don't need to be good at every single thing. You don't need to master hiring and such. And then as this company scales up, you're going to need more and more structure to be put in place. If you're a solo founder, working towards your strengths is an important thing. I think, look, the big skills over here are being able to explain value that is being created, because most people start off in the consulting world as technicians. So if you've heard or read of the E-Myth, you know, you're good at something that you know how to do, you may be intrinsically good at it, or you've learned it over time, and then other people ask you for help with it, and you go, okay, I can help you with that too. And then a second client comes in, and a third, and a fourth, and all of a sudden now you don't know how to manage that workload overall, right? So it's important to be able to hire on your employees and whatnot as well. But I think the key thing is, sales is the lifeblood of any consulting business. And the second is delivery. And so even before you get to really marketing overall, just having those two things in the mix and fired up at all points in time is really, really important. And I think that all founders should learn fundamentally how to explain the value of their service. And I call that sales. You know, I don't think of it in the same way as perhaps a traditional car salesman perspective of view is on selling at all. Selling is just giving people a full picture of what options are in front of them and empowering them to make the right decisions. And sometimes I can be with you and sometimes I can be without you, and either is okay.
That's so good. Yeah, you're totally right there. And is that the case where, like, very early on, were you the one selling and delivering that value, or like did you start Powered by Search with somebody else where they're doing one and you're doing the other?
It started for the first month by myself, and then I quickly realized that I was going to be a bottleneck. And so I hired a second person and a third person on board as well. So we had a team of three by the time we hit our third month. And then it expanded basically from over there. I think by the time we had our first year, we were probably at seven at that point in time. And there's these different roles or functions. I kind of think about agencies in the same way as like a symphony in some ways. You know, you need a conductor and then you have everybody playing their own musical instruments. The first role that most agency owners should be thinking about getting themselves out of is the project management role. So the intrinsic communication that happens in between teams and with clients. And so you need somebody who excels in organization. And so that's one of the first roles that I coach my agency owner, you know, coaching clients to go ahead and find. And then the next role is productizing some of the delivery that you're actually doing as well. So most of the time, I think that the selling and marketing function is the hardest part to actually replace or to add on to the team. And so for the most part, founders should be focused on finding great clients and assessing fit. The number one mistake that I find agencies make is actually inviting the wrong clients to work with them. And then that really changes the trajectory of the business in the sense that, you know, you might have a non-fit client and therefore water down your positioning. You may have a client who doesn't fit your core values and demoralizes the team. And hiring is hard. So when you find somebody amazing to work with you, I think that an agency's biggest assets is actually its people, not their clients.
When we come back in just a moment, Dev shares the 9 systems to grow your business to 7 figures. Just a quick thanks to our sponsor for this episode, LinkedIn. Now, LinkedIn is an undiscovered gold mine for many advertisers. One thing I really love about advertising on LinkedIn is how you can target by very exclusive and specific criteria that you won't find anywhere else, such as company growth rates, so you can reach fast-growing organizations, job seniorities, so you can target the decision makers and close deals quicker, job titles, so you can focus your advertising specific to your ideal customer profile, and more. That's LinkedIn's competitive advantage. It's the world's largest professional networking site. LinkedIn allows you to reach more than 90 million senior level influencers, 62 million decision makers, and 10 million C-suite members. And it's one of the many reasons why more than 78% of B2B marketers rate LinkedIn as the most effective social media platform at helping their organization achieve specific objectives. Whether you're looking to generate leads, drive website traffic, or build brand awareness, LinkedIn advertising can help you reach your business goals quicker. So do business where business is done. Get a free $100 advertising credit towards your first LinkedIn campaign at linkedin.com/growtoday or find that link in the description. Enough about this. Let's jump back into my chat with Dev. There's so many follow-up questions I have for this. One of them is you talked about that wrong client. You already mentioned a few, but is that related to niching down? I find a lot of good consultants or agencies like niche down to an industry or even a subsector of a field. But is that what's your view on niching? And did you niche down with Powered by Search early on, or did you go more broad?
Early on, we were more broad. And then we started niching down. And so every year we thought of the business as like an evolution. So 11 years in, we've done, you know, 11 revolutions around the sun, and the business has gone through lots of change. And it's all positive in the sense that we looked at what we're not going to do the following year as much as what we were going to do. And that naturally leads to narrowing down focus and execution around who we would work with. And so the folks we work with are scale-up B2B SaaS companies who aren't growing fast enough. They've already got to product market fit. So essentially they've got to 0 to 1, and now they're struggling to get from 1 to 10. And even further down that path, we've seen, you know, they've tried working with in-house resources, and that hasn't worked out the way that they expected it to. They've tried some consultants or freelancers, and that hasn't worked out. They may even have worked with some channel-specific agency, so perhaps an SEO-only agency or a PPC-only agency that was a generalist. And what they're now seeking is to work with someone who's got B2B SaaS experience, a playbook for demand generation and growth, and they want to shortcut their learning curve. So you see how specific that actually is? That that evolved over time. And again, part of like our work in public philosophy is everything we were doing for our clients, we started publishing on our blog, which today has become to us, like it's a map of the universe of SaaS marketing knowledge. And it's all based off case studies that we are building from our own client roster effectively. But that's just a little bit about how we've come so far. I think niching down is a really great idea. It's a good idea to become clear on who you're for and who you're not for. Certainly encourage it to all the people that I work with in the coaching business. But frankly, I encourage it to all of our B2B SaaS clients as well. One of the first questions we ask them is, who do you help? What problems do you solve? And how does it work? And if they're unclear on who they help and they say, we help Fortune 500 companies, you know, that's a really hard market to target. You know, you know who the companies are, but there's no real similarities between them other than their size and perhaps how long they've been around. But their set of problems is so vast and broad that there's no set of pages or content you could put in front of them as a mass that wouldn't be watered down. And so we're really a big fan of the specificity principle. Like the more specific you can get about how you can help somebody, the more likely that they'll respond to that.
What was those three questions? You said, who do you help? How do you help them? And was there a third question or was it just those two?
Yes, this is part of our qualification. When we're working with somebody, we're just trying to figure out like, do they have product market fit before we consider working with them? And the questions really are, who do you help? And so they must have a good understanding of who their target market, their audience is, the roles they sell into, the characteristics, the firmographics of the company that they wish to sell into. The second is, what problems do you solve? And this is an interesting question because a lot of people actually answer this incorrectly. What they do is they talk about what their solution offers, which is not the same as the problem that it solves. So if someone says, I have an invoicing SaaS, okay, or I have a CRM company, that is a solution. That is not a problem. So we ask specifically for, do they understand what the problems their customers share with them in a demo or in a survey, for example, a jobs to be done type of survey? The things that they struggle with actually matter more than the solution being sold, because that contextually relates the solution itself. And the last question is, how does it work? Meaning, you know, do they have a clear understanding of how the customer actually comes on board? Is it a demo-based sale? Is it a product-led growth, you know, trial with credit card, without credit card, and then all the different flavors of what might happen down the line? You know, you can have demos that are product tours, demos that are one-on-one, demos that are group demos, demos that are on demand and not with a human on the other end. And so if they're trying to throw this stuff on the wall and see what sticks, it really tells us that they don't know what they're doing at that point in time. And that's where they need some expert guidance. Mm.
How did you figure that out for PowerBus? Was it like, you know, and you're also helping other consultant agency almost about that. Do you help them figure out what they're great at or who they've helped in the past? Like, how do you figure out your niche or who you help?
Yeah. Figuring out your niche is not a democratic decision. It's not something you do together as an entire company. It comes from the founder and maybe with a healthy input from an executive team overall. But if you look at like the Venn diagram of all the clients that you've worked with in the past, the ones that have been the most profitable, that have got the best results, the intersection of that is what you're good at doing and that you would enjoy doing for a long time, because it has dividends and it gets results for clients basically as well. We looked at a few other things as well, like, is the industry actually growing? Is it likely to continue growing over time? And what are some of the other tailwinds that are in the market? And for us, like the last one was actually, where do we enjoy spending time? This is something that I learned from reading Tim Ferriss's work around, you know, look at your own credit card statements. The stuff you spend money on the most is probably the stuff you enjoy. And we spend a lot of money on SaaS. And so just looking at that and spending time on SaaS communities and places like Product Hunt, we're like, this is what we would spend time on anyways. And we have amazing clients in this sector. So why don't we just do this and make it fun across the board every single time? The other question, and this is a salient benefit of niching down, is often I get the question, well, won't I be pigeonholing myself if I niche down? right? Won't I be saying no to all these great opportunities? And it's a matter of thinking short-term versus long-term. Short-term, yes, you will. Long-term, you'll be creating a lot of leverage if you niche down, because what happens is the people you work with at a given company, so in this case, it could be a B2B SaaS company, for example, they have a career trajectory as well, which means that if they work in B2B SaaS, you know, before, and they work in B2B SaaS now, it's likely that they're going to work at a technology company next. And so now you get to have the ability to take a relationship and build that with you as you transition over time. And so even if that person leaves and gets promoted and goes into a different role, they'll take the relationship with you as long as you as a consultant have delivered, right? And shown an ROI from the prior work relationship. What happens when you're a generalist and you work with everybody is that web of the universe becomes very jumbled. Meaning if you're working with somebody in insurance and now they go into banking and you don't have clients in banking, they're unlikely to come back to you and say, well, you don't really have experience in banking. But the nice thing about having a niche focus is that you get to be way more focused both about your marketing and selling, but also the client relationships are one where as people go through their own journey, they tend to take you along with them. Mm.
That's such a good answer to that question. I get that a lot as well when I tell them go niche down. I'm going to be pigeonholed, but you said it best. And I'm going to bar that if anybody asks that question ever to me. I want to shift gears and talk about one other follow-up question to something you said earlier. You talked about productizing services. What do you mean by that? And, how can that really help scale somebody's consulting or agency practice?
So I really like nerding out about the fact that, you know, there's so much great expertise in the world, and there's a delta between what an expert knows what they're capable of and what their clients know what they're capable of. And generally speaking, the expert knows that they know so much more and they can help in so many more ways than they're currently helping their clients today. And this is true for probably every kind of expert in the world, every kind of consultant or agency, where they go, if we had the buy-in of the client, we could do so much more for them. Now, the problem is that a lot of the expertise is actually delivered in one-on-one formats, right? It's done in email, it's done in presentations, it's done in Zoom calls and things like that. And then the call ends or the email terminates, and then there's no body of knowledge effectively. And so we loosely call all of this capability, you know, in air quotes, we call it experience. And experience is a fine thing, but it's also kind of muddy and subjective, because most of the time we measure experience in the function of years of experience. And often, at least what I found, is that just because someone's got 5, 10, or 15 years of experience does not actually point to how effective they're going to be. And so now enter the idea of, like, what if you were able to sequence what you do and publish it in a way which makes sense and is easy to both consume and easy to explain at the same time. So the idea of productizing services actually starts with the idea of productizing intellectual property. And so it is the secret sauce of what you do and how you do it. And of course, there are, you know, well-trodden playbooks of how to do that. For example, publish a book, document what you do on your blog. But then the next level is actually to create a methodology. And the methodology is where you lay out what you do and how you do it and the sequence you do it in, so that it builds one step at a time. And it also shows a logical progression to the clients you actually work with. The idea there being that if you show somebody a ladder, what do they want to do at that point, Ramley? Like, if you show them a ladder,
they climb it.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And that's exactly what the point of a methodology basically is as well. It's just, you start at the bottom and then you work your way towards the top. The best methodologies are not ladders, they're actually flywheels or cycles. Yeah. In the sense that you start off with, you know, point one and you get to all the way around, and then you just do it all over again, but you hit the next level.
So good. That's really fascinating. And, you know, originally when we were talking about what to talk about, we were going to talk about the 9 systems for scaling B2B SaaS clients, but we've gone on this rabbit hole with agency clients. But can you just briefly now talk about that, those 9 systems? Because you do, it's all fitting in for me now. Like, this is your methodology, I'm guessing. This is that flywheel that you're talking about, that to help those clients.
Yeah. So in the beginning, we really struggled to be able to explain succinctly to clients how we go through the thought process of attracting, engaging, and converting traffic. We had lots of clients coming to us and just saying, we need visibility, we need brand awareness, we need acquisition. And then we'd go, and this is like 9 years ago, we'd go, oh, cool, we know exactly how to do that. We can buy PPC ads and we can get SEO traffic and let's publish some blog posts and things like that. And the funny thing was, we would get them the result that they said they wanted, and then they were still unhappy at the end of it. So 9 months, 12 months down the road, they'd be like, yeah, you know what, this is amazing, but this is not exactly what I wanted. And we'd ask them the question, well, what did you want? And we realized that sometimes if you're a buyer, it's hard to articulate the entire journey of all the outcomes that you want. And so it's often the most obvious thing that you basically put in front, which is usually traffic. You know, it's for whatever reason, marketers seem to want traffic and visibility, and they think that is an end to it itself. But what they really want at the end of the day is growth. They want conversions. They want the ability to push the needle and showcase to the rest of the business how marketing has a contribution to the growth of the business, whether that's demos or trials or leads or whatever metric really that influences the revenue and the growth of the business. And so what we did is we started to piece together all of this and said, okay, we know that we need to get a way of finding, getting prospects to find the client. That's an acquisition method or system. And we call that attract. The second is once we've got the traffic, we know that these people, they might know who the client is, but they need to like the client. Otherwise, they're not going to move forward and spend any time on the website. One of the most insidious problems, obviously, in online marketing is that, you know, most websites convert at under 1%. And so that's a little bit like if you, we contextualize this in the sense that if you had a restaurant, for example, and you had a menu posted outside your restaurant, and for every 100 people who came by and looked at your menu, only one came inside to your restaurant, what does that say about your restaurant?
It's bad.
Not that good, right? Like, yeah. That restaurant would crash and burn really fast. But this is exactly what happens online, except it shows up in anonymous analytics and we just don't know that it's Ramley and Dev who visited the website. Mm. And out of the many Ramleys and Devs, there could be, you know, an ideal prospect who looked at the website and just wasn't very compelled by it. And so we then looked at, okay, we need to find ways to engage and motivate, educate and motivate prospects. And then the last thing we need to do is, you know, reduce the friction for somebody to raise their hand and ask for help, essentially. That's what happens when someone fills out a form, when they request a demo. What they're really doing is saying, I have a problem and I need help and I want to talk to somebody about it, right? At a very human level. So we created 9 systems for all of this, and it's called, the summary of it is called the predictable growth method. We created it because most companies that we work with, most B2B SaaS companies who approach us have spiky growth. So they have feast and famine cycles where, you know, things are really great, and then all of a sudden there's no pipeline and their sales reps or their trial to paid conversion rates fall off drastically. And so the systems are, I'll just kind of read them off, and then, you know, we can dive into any one of them that, you know, you think might be a good direction to go down. So the first system, I'll just kind of list them off. There's harvest demand, build authority, fill pipeline, pinpoint problems, educate and motivate prospects, prescribe solutions, drive deal flow, accelerate pipeline, and finally scale growth. So those are the 9, and there's like 3 for each section of the awareness to consideration and purchase funnel, where harvest demand, build authority, and fill pipeline are all about getting a prospect to discover the website in this case. Pinpoint, educate, and prescribe solutions are about getting them to engage. And then the last 3, drive deal flow, accelerate pipeline, and scale growth are all about increasing demos and trials and conversions.
Really fascinating. That makes starting to all make sense now. It's all fitting in. Out of those 9 or even like multiple ones, which one do you find your clients you approach, which ones are they missing the most? Like where do most B2B SaaS fail at in this 9 steps?
So there's a difference between what they want and what they need. Mm. What they want is fill pipeline. because they usually have a quota around either a sales target that they wish to hit or a pipeline conversion target that they wish to hit. We actually came up with a metric and we call it QPC, which is quality pipeline certainty. And that's a function of both the quality of the leads that they're generating and the quantity to hit quota. And we created a grading matrix around this. So that's what they want, which is fill pipeline. What they really need, however, is pinpoint problems and educate and motivate prospects. So if you think about most most SaaS websites, they do not talk as much about the problems that their customers are facing in the way that the customer would describe the problem. What they spend a lot of time on is describing their solution, the benefits of that solution, and so on. But here's the thing, if I don't think that you understand my problems, why would I trust that or even invest the time into looking at your solutions? And that's a big disconnect. And so often when we're looking at one of the types of fits that we look at is something we call message to market fit. And it's built on good positioning. It's a second step right after positioning, which is messaging. But in the messaging, we look at, are they making declarative statements? Or are they articulating the client's problem better than the client could, or in this case, the customer could?
Interesting. That totally makes sense. Thank you for sharing all of that. I really do appreciate it. Like, I want to go back to your journey with Powered by Search. You started off 2009. It was 6 figures, 4 months, 7 figure in 2 years. Like, how much has it grown now that you've niched down? You have a system. You have, you have all of this referrals coming in. How quickly has it grown?
In the last time I think we publicly talked about this was when we did, we still submit rankings to the Profit 500 and a couple of these other lists. Our 5-year growth rate was just over 1,000%. And so where we are today is a very healthy, niche, profitable business. And we run it more from the perspective of, is this business adding a ton of value and is it profitable, as opposed to the revenue metric specifically? That's essentially the best way for us to know that as a bootstrap business. We're not funded. We're customer funded or client funded. And that we're running a great business, attracting the best people in the world to work with, both from the client side as well as from the talent side. We also went remote first a couple of years ago, and that really opened up our world. Obviously, in the pandemic, everybody's remote first, but we've been at it for a little bit longer than that. And it just meant that we started hiring people who are, more than an hour's commute basically from our office. And that really opened up this ability of just going, rather than finding people who, both clients as well as staff, who are in our kind of local proximity, they could be anywhere in the world. As long as they were the best in the world, we would work with them.
That's so good. Thank you for sharing that stuff. And as I start wrapping up, just a couple more questions. The first one is, we've kind of really focused on consultants and agency owners today, but if you could give one or two pieces of advice to, somebody who's a consultant or maybe somebody who's working but wants to maybe dabble into, consulting or agency, starting an agency, what would be your advice to them?
If you're looking to start an agency or trying to grow your consulting practice, I think getting really clear on which problem you want to solve, because most of the time, consultants are smart people, agencies are filled with smart people as well. And they go, we can solve a lot of different problems. We'll solve whatever problem comes next through our door. But having that thinking time to get clear on what problems you solve and which ones you are not willing to solve is a function. It's a step in that process of niching down and declaring your positioning as well. Getting really clear on what you're good at, what the market will need, and what the market is ready to buy is where that intersection of that magic basically ends up happening. So that's number one. And I think the second one is really around framing expectations and communicating value. I have a thread on Twitter about how most agencies get fired, not for their ability to drive value, but rather their inability to communicate value in the first place. And this is a frequent complaint that we hear from incoming clients, which is whoever they work with today, they get data, but they do not get insights. And you know, to you, to your point about the power of story, data without a narrative is, it can be interpreted a thousand different ways. And generally, the way that you as a consultant want to share that story with your client to kind of highlight the value that you're collaboratively driving is not always the way that a client will see it. So I have a quick thread over there about how to make reporting and communicating value more effective. And that in itself is going to improve retention. It's going to improve expansion, revenue, and growth. It'll improve your referral getting systems as well. But it stems from that initial adage of keep the promises that you make.
So good. So good. Yeah. I'll link that thread to that Twitter that you posted up. But another question is, you know, we also talked a little bit about B2B SaaS and marketing. A lot of my listeners are marketers, but if you can give one or two pieces of advice to B2B SaaS marketers or marketers in general, what would be those pieces of advice you'd like to give?
Yeah, for B2B SaaS, I'd say the two things. The first one is you want to meet the customer where they're at the stage of their buyer journey. Too many B2B SaaS websites have only one way of converting on their entire site, which is either start a trial or request a demo. And they don't have very much else other than that. So I think that the primary job of your website should be to start a relationship with a future prospect and to nurture that. Getting down into the nitty gritty, if you have no way for them to want to fill out a form and give you their name and email address, they will forever be anonymous to you until they are ready to buy. And so, you know, finding ways of creating compelling offers, not just clear ones. I mean, a demo or a trial is a very clear offer, but it's not compelling if the buyer isn't ready to start that process, right? I mean, you and I have all been there where we're asked to do something that we're just not ready to do yet. And so we created a tool called the Buyer Awareness Matrix, where the fundamental thinking process around that is there are four types of awareness. There are customers who are problem unaware. And, you know, if you're a category creating SaaS, then you might want to focus on these guys because they're not even aware. Like, for example, when the iPhone came out in 2007, no one knew that they needed smartphones. But then lo and behold, it was there, right? And then the revolution around smartphones happened. You could be in the second bracket, which is you're problem aware. So you're pretty clear on what the root causes of the problems are, but you haven't solved them. There's solution aware people. And then there's finally product aware people. And that's where a purchase basically happens when they're both problem and solution aware. They have pain points. And then now they find a product that can help them with it. And so the message that I want to share is, like, too many companies think the buyer awareness is higher than what it's actually at. And so create resources to help the buyer understand how to buy your product, not just your product specifically, but how to buy a product in your industry. Because if you won't do it, then what will happen is the software directories and comparison websites will try doing it for you, and you won't be in control of the narrative at that point. That's kind of why a lot of SaaS companies pay a bucket load of money to folks like Capterra or to G2 and so on, because they've taken on this journey essentially rather than controlling it themselves and saying, here's how you should be thinking about buying software in our space. Here are the comparable alternatives. Here's how you could do it with Excel or Word, but that would actually not be a very good thing for you. And here's a couple of direct competitors you should consider as well. If you're this type of buyer, you should choose us. If you're that type of buyer, you should choose them.
That's so good. Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that and sharing all that we've talked about in the last 50, 55 minutes. But one final question, where can people find out more about you and your work, and where can people find out more about Powered by Search?
So me personally, like, check me out on Twitter, at Dev Basu, or on LinkedIn, Dev Basu as well. And then on the web, go over to poweredbysearch.com, and you'll find a treasure trove of SaaS marketing content over there if you happen to be a B2B SaaS marketer or company that isn't growing fast enough.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Dev. I appreciate it.
Ramley, this was such a joy. Thanks for having me on.
Well, that's it for this episode. I want to remind you that I've created a free growth cheat sheet with all the actionable tips from this episode. I'm surprised how many people listen to this podcast and actually don't download the free cheat sheet. You can get it for free at growthtoday.fm/126 to get this for free now. Get it before I take it away, because when I publish the next episode, you won't be able to access this one. You can find this link in the description as well. Before I end, I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode again. These folks help cover the cost of the hosting and other marketing tools that you use for this podcast. Thanks to LinkedIn. Now, LinkedIn is a really great goldmine for many advertisers. I really love how you're able to target exclusive and specific criteria that you can't find anywhere else. You can target by company growth rate, job seniority, job title, skills, and more. So whether you're looking to generate leads, drive website traffic, and build brand awareness, LinkedIn advertising can help you reach your business goals. So get a free $100 advertising credit to watch your first LinkedIn campaign at linkedin.com/growthtoday, or you can find that link in the description. Before I do, and if you've been listening this far, I'd love for you to support me. There's three easy ways that you can do it. First, you can tell a friend about this podcast. You can share a quote on Twitter or LinkedIn, or you can just tell a friend by email or even face-to-face, if that is even possible after all of this. Second, you can join the Grow Today mailing list. I email all the cheat sheets directly to you each week, so you don't have to download it. And third, you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts where other people can find out more about this. I'd really love for you to do that. That's it for this episode. Until the next one, this is your host, Ramley John. Keep safe, and as always, keep on growing. Passion, passion, hip-hop, hip-hop.